From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. The opportunity for you, if you're a regular listener, to get a little bit of insight into the media issues of the week, we hope, if we're doing our job. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, welcoming you here today with Kaylin Brown, the head of the journalism program at the College of St. Rose. Wonderful to see you.
Nice to see you, Rex.
Absolutely. Judy Patrick is here, former editor of the Daily Gazette, now with the New York Press Association.
Always good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great it is to have you back. And at the end of the table, there's Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. He himself, who needs no introduction, of course. So we'll move along.
And deserves none.
What can we do? No, absolutely not. So I just want to pose this quote from the president to begin. That is the president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. He was talking in a private conversation with Leslie Stahl of CBS News, and she had asked him at the end of an interview, why do you denigrate the press so much? And he said, you know why I do it? He said, I do it to discredit you all and demean you all so that when you write negative stories about me, no one will believe you. I think we've all understood that to be the case, but it is astonishing to actually hear that from the president himself in his own words. His goal is, of course, to make sure that there's sort of a scorched earth around him so that, in effect, nobody but himself is believable. And it so far, isn't it working?
It's not working. The fact is, it's working with his people. You know, he's working with the Fox crowd. He's working with that group of people in America who, you know, are firmly in his camp. And that's about 30% of the people. The other people watch CNN all day long to get a clue. That's me. Or watch MSNBC and just wake up depressed in the morning. My wife has a coffee cup that says, I wake up in the morning, I feel bad because Donald Trump is president. So there are an awful lot of people who believe that he is a despicable cad, which he is. And he doesn't succeed with those people.
I think you're wrong. I think he's making great inroads because look at the rising distrust of the Russia investigation by Mueller, the rising distrust of the media. His own popularity is rising. The polling showing that the Democratic blue wave is fading at this point. I think he's succeeding with this.
Well, you couldn't be more wrong yourself. And I myself resent
being told that you're wrong.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because, you know, I mean, I have a lot of education and I know about these things.
Wait a minute, it's time to gang up. I think you're wrong too, Alan. I think
of course the three of you always believe.
Again and again we're hearing fake news for everything. And when I was an editor, my reporters and photographers would get that when they went out into the crowd and people would say, oh, that's just fake news. You would get it for something as simple as a police blotter entry as well as for the Russian investigation. I understand that there are still believers in the truth. But this idea that the news can't be trusted has increased over time.
First of all, you know that the trust in the press has always been polling at like a hound's belly. And second of all, Mr. Rex, with your lineup of all the things that good that are happening to Trump, he's still, you know, 35% of the American people. This is not a guy who is beloved or anything like that. He's very unpopular. And there's a reason for that, because of what he does, including beating up on this cherished institution, First Amendment institution of the press. I'm so sorry, Rex. Don't feel so sorry for yourself. Get out there and fight.
So Leslie Stahl revealed those comments during the Deadline Club gathering recently where some people were recognized for their accomplishments in journalism. Leslie Stahl and Judy Rudruff, two very respected journalists who have been at it for decades were talking about their careers in journalism, and Stahl made that comment about she was in the office with Trump when he made these observations about his strategy for discrediting the press. In the conversation between Woodruff and Stahl, they talked about the need for more education. So, Alan, with all your education, you would be on board for a proposal to further educate people about the press and how it works. I can imagine a model where educators need to be obligated now. Educators who are taking summer breaks need to figure out how to get journalists in the classroom. There needs to be a proactive effort made. I've been thinking hard about this. So, and journalists need to go out in the classrooms. Well, they need to make an effort to become ambassadors for journalism. It's part of their job. They should be going out to classrooms at the elementary school level and helping people understand how journalism works. And that can happen very young for children who are in classrooms.
Well, I consider this to be a vicious and unprincipled attack on me personally. So I would like to answer
it. Sounds very much like Donald Trump.
I'd like to answer it if I may. I founded the Legislative Gazette, the first internship program that we had up and around the legislature. It isn't that I don't believe everything that you're saying. I do. On the other hand, I just think that you guys have got to understand that people say things like this thing that you say Trump said. Okay.
It was Leslie Stahl who talked about the meeting with Trump. Yes.
Okay. So one day the governor calls me up. I shouldn't be talking about this, but he calls me up and he says, "You wrote a good column about me. How come?" He says, "You're always writing bad stuff. You wrote a good column about me." I said, "Governor, I just wanted to confuse you." Now, if you took that literally, and he laughed and I laughed, but if you took that literally, you would think that, you know, I had said something that was whatever wrong. But in fact, people say things just to get a rise out of the other guy. Maybe that's what he was doing with Stahl.
I think we're talking about something broader, and it happens every day. Mike Allen and Axios made a little listing of all the places, all the things that the president is attacking. As every new threat pops up, he attacks the media, the Justice Department, the FBI, the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, the intelligence community, the special counsel, the team of prosecutors, New York State investigators, Democrats on the Intelligence Committee, unreliable GOP sources. He attacks everybody with this kind of scorched earth policy. And it actually does have an effect. And the difficulty for us in the media is, how do you cover that? How do you convey to people that this is a political strategy without then playing into his hand of making it seem as though you're anti-Trump?
Well, you do have columnists and they lay it out. You do have editorial pages and they lay it out. You do have conferences, except that when you just laid out all of these things that he's been attacking, I have to sit back and say, okay, Rex, you're right.
You know, I have to wonder if Donald Trump saw this reference to what Leslie Stahl's reporting he said and whether he called that fake news, which would be pretty ironic.
It would be.
But it's interesting, Rex, what you said about all the attacking that's coming from the administration. So the EPA held a national summit and 10 reporters were invited. There were about, I believe, 200 people in the room when Scott Pruitt was making some announcements. And a couple of reporters were not invited in. One Associated Press reporter was shoved out. And the focus then turned to, and rightly so, that this reporter was manhandled out of a location where the public good was being discussed and what was going to happen with drinking water. But do we know what Pruitt said about the drinking water? That's the question. We all became so interested in the fact that the reporter was thrown out of the building. Did anyone pay attention to what Pruitt was saying about drinking water? It is posted on the EPA.gov website. You can see the 4 points that were presented there. But I think that that was another effort, similar to Trump continually attacking different venues. We have to stay focused on what matters. So in that instance, the health of our drinking water, the safety of our drinking water matters. And we need to know, is the EPA doing its job? What are they doing to ensure the safety of our drinking water?
So it is interesting because it is something of a distraction then in that context to focus on the reporters being excluded. But pushing out reporters from a public meeting to discuss drinking water. The problem with PFOA, for example, is one of the topics there, which is contaminated drinking water in our listening area. That's a serious breach of protocol. It's not unconstitutional, but both are outrageous, I guess. It is outrageous to ban the press from a public event of that sort, but it is, you're right, we need to stay focused on the issues at hand instead of only being outraged by this kind of treatment, right?
Right. This is coming from the person at the top. The person at the top does not have respect for the press, and it's a political strategy, but it is filtering down to the public servants who run administrative agencies. And let's not forget, when you treat the press badly, you're treating the public badly, because we are the representatives of the public.
Right. Exactly.
What about this other thing that is similar in this instance? That is the branding. The president has been using the term spy to refer to the FBI's placement of an informant, apparently, who was looking into the Russian collusion with his campaign. He told one ally this week that he wanted to brand the informant as a spy because he knows that that's a nefarious term that would resonate more with the media and with the public. And in fact, that's kind of what's going on. Fox News just picks up that word all the time. They're calling this Spygate. That's the term that is now being used by Fox News. We're in the midst of Spygate, and it is a double whammy for the president because he gets to take down the FBI, which is investigating him. And it's also the term witch hunt. A watchdog group looked at Sean Hannity's program on Fox News, and there are so many segments describing the probe as a witch hunt, which is what the president uses as well, claiming that federal law enforcement officers are involved in the creation of the probe had broken the law. That's Sean Hannity and the president colluding to have the same message. We should be concerned about this.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it's obvious that it is not Fox raising those terms like witch hunt. It's the president. And it's the president who said that coined the phrase. And what Fox does is, of course, and CNN has done a wonderful montage of having all the Fox people, one after another, talking about these two terms, witch hunt and Spygate. So it isn't the press. It isn't Fox leading the president. It's quite the other way around.
Well, they're kind of a circle, isn't it? Because he watches Fox and Friends. I don't know if you've actually seen a photo of the desk that he has set up. He's got this. Apparently, it's just off the Oval Office. He's got a long, straight desk with a huge TV screen like right in front of him. So he can literally sit there and take notes and then make phone calls while he's just watching this big monitor. It's kind of an amazing setup.
It's disturbing to think that the leadership of this country is busy watching TV all day long when we are trying to accomplish things in this country. But whether it's happening at the top, it needs to happen from the bottom up.
Yeah.
It needs to be movement from the bottom. And that includes the press, again, trying to make people aware of the issues that matter to them and continuing to deliver facts.
Right. When they use these loaded terms, you really the average reader, the average listener, the average television watcher really has to work hard to figure out what's actually being happening here, who's being accused of what. On the Spygate, it did take a little bit of digging to actually find out, oh, they're just accusing a guy who was doing some regular FBI stuff. I mean, he wasn't embedded in the campaign, my understanding. But using the word spy implies that he was, or infers that he was.
Well, there's one thing we know about this president. He's a liar. He's a propagandist. And if he says it enough, you know, Goebbels back in the 1930s had it all right. You say it enough, some people will believe it. And I see an alarming parallelism between what will happen with the Nazis and what Trump is doing now.
All right. If you want to share your thoughts, media@wamc.org, and we would be interested to hear that, and we will share that. By the way, just before we leave the president, there has now been a court ruling. U.S. District Court Judge Naomi Rice Buchwald has ruled that the President Trump and the White House violated the First Amendment rights of Twitter users who were blocked from his personal account. So if you were blocked from at Real Donald Trump, your constitutional rights have been violated. It is an unconstitutional exclusion from the platform, being a breach of those rights. That's surprising. But Anyway.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating because it declares that is an open government forum. It's not, private people can still block. I can still block anyone.
Block Alan. Why are you looking at me?
I'm not going to say that. But the judge found that the @real Donald Trump, which he was maintaining was still his personal account, is essentially a space operated by the government for government purposes. And it is.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to argue that the @POTUS was the only government Twitter account. But obviously, a lot of government presidential businesses is going out @real Donald Trump.
You know, this is a lower court decision. One could only wonder if this reached the Supreme Court of the United States, which have turned out to be, of course, five toadies doing anything that the president likes, whether they wouldn't overturn this.
Here is, anything more about the president we want to talk about? We should really get off this, right?
Yes, please. Yes, I'm good getting off of that. There's a lot more interesting things to talk about.
Okay, let's talk about something that was addressed by one of our columnists, Chris Churchill, who is sometimes heard on WAMC.
Yeah, we love him. That doesn't mean we always agree with
him. That's right. And one of the principles that we adhere to, and I know Judy felt this way as editor of the Gazette, is that your column are once you give them a column, they're pretty much free to write what they want, and you may not agree with it. So there you go. Chris Churchill put forth the notion that it's a mistake on the part of the news media to identify by name the mass killers. In this case, he was talking about the shooting at Santa Fe High School south of Houston, in which 10 people were killed. And he said, we don't need to know the name of the teenager, or we don't need to see his face, we don't need to hear about him, because that is encouraging emulation. It's encouraging other people to do it. In fact, may lead other people to do this. What do you think about that notion?
Are you going to call on somebody? Because I don't want to.
You don't want
to? No, I will. I'll be very happy to tell you why.
Step forward, Dr. Chartok. Tell me what you think.
I'll be very happy to tell you why I disagree with him. We have a pathology in this country now of these kinds of shootings. And we are in a national debate and a national consideration of how to handle this terrible chaos. The day you tell the press not to do this, is a day that the public will have to stop thinking about the individual pathology of the person who's done the crime. So if we hear about the person, if we hear about who his parents were, if we hear his father's defense of the guy, we have seen it virtually every day now, why he went wrong, the public is not going to have its chance to figure this out. I hear and respect what Chris is saying. Believe me, I do. But on the other hand, you could say that about any criminal on any case, including rape cases that go on.
Right. This is the popular feel-good thing in the media now to talk about not doing this. But I disagree with Chris as well. If you take it to its logical, its absurd conclusion, then we shouldn't report on any of them at all. Columbine never happened. The Parkland shootings never happened.
No, I know he's not saying they didn't happen. He's saying don't talk about the shooters.
Right. But he is saying because his point was that people will emulate them. But what they're emulating really is the event itself. I don't think they're emulating the person.
Now, you know, Judy, there's always been an argument that we should not name the victims of rape. And I can respect that one because it's not their fault. They didn't do it. It was done to them. There are people who appear on this program on a fairly regular basis. Women who disagree with that, who think it's news, and the day you start to play with news and you can't do it, you know, you've messed up. So I'm thinking that this is a really bad idea.
Churchill's column that talks about not naming these individuals has value, though. I remember when Columbine first happened, it was within a very short time that the New York Times talked to a number of psychiatrists and psychologists about, again, what you said about the pathology. Will people copycat? And because these shooters were showing up on the covers of national magazines like Time magazine, were they becoming heroes? And what's the responsibility
when you say
of
heroes,
the press?
You don't really mean heroes, do you?
They
So a potential shooter sees themselves to some degree as a martyr slash hero in some instances, according to...
But not by others. I mean, this guy's a lunatic,
well,
right?
By other would-be shooters.
Yeah.
So if you think that that is your flaming glory on the way out is to, you know, immemorialize yourself by appearing in the media, then that could be a reason to keep going. If there's any way to stop the shooting and it means paying less attention to the shooters, I think there's value there.
So
I think that it's a distraction to focus so heavily on that. Where has the gun control conversation gone when we start talking about these shooters and their personalities and a girlfriend foresought them?
Well, you know, it's
interesting because if you look at the research, there actually is research suggesting that reducing the focus on personal details of mass killers could deter future mass killing campaigns. So if our ethical code as journalists includes the notion minimize harm, which the Society of Professional Journalists code does say, that is to the extent that you can, consistent with your truth-telling responsibility, minimize harm. So then that does suggest that maybe we shouldn't. As Chris points out, 140 researchers and academics last year wrote an open letter to the media urging that we not report the images and names of mass killers. I agree that I disagree with Chris. I agree that this is a bad notion. But it's very hard to make a consistent argument that he's wrong when our code of ethics says minimize harm to the extent that you can. Maybe it's a question of balance. Maybe we just don't do as much about the killer, but then you want to know, people have a need to understand what happened there. You need to understand, why did this person go into the classroom at Sandy
Hook?
But
to what end, Rex? To what end? I mean, the fact is, the reason we have to know about this guy and we have to know about why he did what he did is that if we're going to come up with any kind of cure to some of this or any kind of way of dealing with it, we're going to have to know what to watch out for. We're going to have to know who these people are. This is ridiculous to say that. And as far as this pablum that you keep giving us, that the first thing that you do is that the press does is to do no harm.
That's not what I said, and that is not what.
Okay, to minimize.
That's not what it says. Yes. Okay.
But you do harm all the time. Let's face it.
Absolutely. Yes. Because that's part of our truth-telling responsibility. What I said is it's to minimize harm, consistent with our truth-telling responsibility. We do harm all the time. That's right, and because that's what truth-telling sometimes does.
Someone might think it's harmful if. Parents would be held responsible for not locking up their guns. That was a question that came out of the Santa Fe
murders. You bet.
Murders. So maybe someone feels that they're being injured because of a story that talks about parents are going to be required to lock up their guns. So parents are mad because they don't want to lock up their guns. Well, is there a responsibility there? And should legislators be looking into legislation that would change how guns are stored? I mean, these are real questions that come out of issues like this, and they should be paid attention to along with the person who did the deed.
Right, and should the parents who leave these guns around or give them to the kids, should they face criminal penalties?
Right.
I believe they should.
But when the news covers that story, mm-hmm. someone is harmed because the people who don't want to lock up their guns, for instance, they will say, you are harming my freedom to have my guns however I want to have my guns.
Sure.
So, but what's the greater good say about that? What did Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill say in terms of utilitarianism, right?
Yes.
So is the greater good being served? I mean, that's the question.
No, the greater good is the question.
Is the greater good, are journalists counting the greater good? Is that our responsibility?
I absolutely think it is because we represent the governed, not those who are governing.
You know, I think it's a question of balance, as Rex said. The idea of not making heroes out of mass shooters, but also you have to report. We are in the business of providing information to the public so they can understand things. And withholding information is not in the public's interest.
This is difficult. So anyway, again, your thoughts are welcome. Media at WAMC.org. To what extent does the truth-telling responsibility require us to do something that may, researchers tell us, lead more people to be copycat killers?
We do know that very quickly, I know we're out of time, but We do know that at least some of these people have said, watch me, I'm going to be famous tomorrow.
Mm.
So that certainly makes that point.
Tough question. We thank you for joining us on the Media Project, folks. That's Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, Kaylin Brown, and I'm Rex Smith, and we hope we'll see you again next week.
We call it the Three Against One Show.
Best we can. Thanks.
It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.